Hey, this is Eben Matthews with a special mini episode, audio blog style. I don't know, whatever you want to call it. I'm just going to talk for a minute. I just watched The Phantom Menace. That's right. Star Wars Episode 1, The Phantom Menace. So Adam suggested, as we get ready for the final episode of the Star Wars saga here at the end of the month, Episode 9, that we go back and rewatch the whole saga. And it has been a long time since I've watched the prequels, like a very long time. I'm thinking probably a decade. So I was really curious if they were as bad as I remember. Really curious how the technical aspects of them would hold up. You know, I felt like no matter what complaints you have about the story, the acting, the plot, the themes, the specific creative choices, at least I remembered the effects generally being very strong and the kind of visual design being very strong. So I was a little curious if going back I would feel that way. And as a little bit of context, actually something that Adam and I have been talking about, I've seen some other things recently, most notably Toy Story, and it's sort of the opposite where Toy Story is still a brilliant film. I think it's an incredibly well-written, you know, just creative powerhouse that it always has been. But to me and to my aesthetic sensibility, you know, a lot of the animation just feels weird given the kind of sensibility that we've now grown up with, largely because of Toy Story. And so the human characters in particular are just bizarre in that movie. And it's been another one that's been a long time since I've seen. So watching it with my kids, you know, obviously they didn't care, but which is actually a testament to it working. But I found Andy and Sid and the human characters in particular to just be weird. and I think that's interesting. It made me really start thinking about the sensibility that we have, or that I have, when I respond to creative work, especially, I think, for some reason in film and television, and especially for me in the realm of effects and animation, where something that is just mind-blowing that we've never seen before feels so real and cohesive when it comes out. And then the sensibility that develops based on those breakthroughs, you know, things get better and better and more cohesive and, you know, more integrated into what feels real. When we go back and see those earlier things, it becomes so obvious where they don't work, where they're not fully integrated into, you know, the scene or the sequence or, you know, whatever those different components are. So it's been something that I've been aware of and thinking about. And so I really, you know, going into The Phantom Menace, I kind of expected to not love Jar Jar, to not love some of the acting and, you know, again, some of the story choices. But I was very curious how the visuals would feel. So starting with the obvious, man, I never appreciated, and I hate to be a hater, but I never appreciated how poor a lot of the acting in that film really is. And you know, I'm a George Lucas apologist. I'm a Star Wars apologist. I was a prequel apologist for a long time until I could finally admit how not great I've come to kind of feel that they are, unfortunately. So you know, what are the things that don't work, in my opinion, in The Phantom Menace? I think there are some real problems with the story and the plot. Obviously, you know, things that have been well trod in Star Wars land and in fandom in general. Too many coincidences, and I think the major thing, which, you know, is now very much a part of the canon, but I remember even at the time being slightly disappointed by what has become to me the biggest creative challenge of the Skywalker saga. And it's one of the things I love about The Mandalorian exploring new territory, is this idea that you're kind of born into being a Jedi, opposed to it being something that you choose or the path that you decide to walk. So It's interesting. I don't object to it in the context of superheroes. I'm perfectly fine with Superman, you know, being born to spectacular abilities given the right circumstances. But that feels different in Star Wars. It feels like a different, you know, thing that was initially felt like we were trying to say before we went down this kind of dynasty of family inheritance that is the Skywalker saga. So there's more, you know, I've been thinking a lot about that, more than I should, but hey, I am a huge Star Wars nerd. So there's more for me to say about that at some point regarding the Skywalker saga. I'm super excited about episode 9. I'm also frankly kind of ready for this story to be done. I think The Mandalorian again shows there's a lot of rich ground to cover in this universe, and I for one am ready to start covering it. So anyway, back to episode 1. So those are some of the things I think aren't particularly strong and don't hold up. You know, I don't need to say Jar Jar's a weakness in the story. Jake Lloyd, I think, man, sorry, Jake. I'm sure you're a wonderful guy out there, and I don't mean this personally towards you. You know, I think that was a lot of pressure to put onto someone who clearly just, you know, isn't or wasn't at that point kind of a natural, you know, actor. And I think, you know, unfortunately didn't have what he needed to kind of carry that role of baby Anakin Skywalker. So, you know, that's certainly not doing the film any favors. So then on to the question about the effects. So surprisingly, I was pleasantly surprised to say that I think most of the effects work in episode 1, you know, actually holds up incredibly well in this film now being, I believe, 97. So 97 would make it, 2017 would have been the 10-year? No, 97. Is that right? I'm having a hard time with math. 2007. So we're actually past 20 years. Is that right? If that math is right, then it's even more impressive. So, you know, that I was, again, pleasantly surprised by. I was very much expecting things like the pod racer segment to feel very much like a video game. And for the most part, it really didn't. I thought that it still worked incredibly well. I would say, if anything, the big battle near the end with all the Gungans and the huge battle droid tank army, I thought held up the least in the whole movie. But I thought all the space stuff worked really well. I thought even for the most part, you know, the effects work on Jar Jar and the other CG characters, you know, was generally very believable. The version that I watched had the CG Yoda in it, and I know there's a divisive element to that as well. I always thought that they did something weird with the puppet version of Yoda in the original release, so I'm actually in favor of the CG Yoda, because at least to me, he looks like Yoda, whereas I felt like that original puppet version didn't, and I'm not sure why, especially considering that they got him pretty right in The Last Jedi. But anyway, so I thought all the effects works held up surprisingly well. And then the thing that I was also really curious about is, you know, the one part of Phantom Menace that I think I and most people have always felt was super cool was that end fight with Qui-Gon, Obi-Wan, and Darth Maul. And in my opinion, that does still work incredibly well. It's still really cool. There are a few moments where, you know, some of the stunt work and the action, you know, feels a little stilted or slow or not quite up to what we're, again, sort of now used to. But it looks great. It works great. The tension is there. The, you know, the action is there. It's kind of, at that point, the coolest Jedi action that we had ever seen. So I'm a fan. I, you know, it's funny. It really didn't disappoint me any more than I thought that it would, and it didn't delight me any more than I thought that it would. My memory of the film in general, I think, was pretty accurate, so I'm kind of impressed by that and surprised by that at the same time. So, you know, on this journey of rewatching all 8 movies going into number 9, 1 down, 7 more to go between now and the end of the year. So I'm looking forward to that journey in all of its ups and downs. If anyone out there listening wants to join in the fun, they are all available on some combination of Disney Plus and iTunes and DVD, Blu-ray, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. As a side note, I own them all on iTunes. I watched them from that collection. Maybe I'll watch the rest that are available on Disney Plus. I know they've done some additional corrections or tweaks. I'll definitely watch episode 4 on there to see the McClunky, which I haven't yet watched. You guys know what I'm talking about. So anyway, that's about 10 minutes on the Phantom Menace. There's more to come. Hope everybody's having a great night. Onward.